listening to Persons of Interest, episode 30. I'm Kendall George.
And this is Ben Kreiss.
So, Ben, we didn't talk about this topic at all, but I know now that we've both seen Lady Gaga's most recent video, Judas.
Yes.
And, you know, just by way of background, not a big Lady Gaga fan, you, right?
No. I haven't bought any of her music at all.
Had you heard or seen any of her videos?
I have seen, I think, parts of some of her videos, and I saw an interview with her with Barbara Walters that my wife found as she was flicking through the channels.
Well, and
that's
and
about it.
So, but what's your impression of Lady Gaga?
I think she's a deeply disturbed individual.
So you're going for a clinical, evaluation.
Yes, I'm going to go for the what is that called? The handbook of psychological disorders. I think that she is playing into the whole artist thing of being weird. And there's plenty of weird people. It's just surprising that sometimes they make it up to the level that she does as far as mainstream or whatever music is concerned, performing and whatnot. So I don't know. I don't know what her background is so much, where she comes from. I didn't learn it much from the interview. But she's, I think she's copying a lot of other styles in different ways. And so in a way she's unique. But in other ways, I think she's a kind of a conglomeration of lots of different previous things.
Yeah.
Like, Bjork meets Madonna.
Bjork.
Yeah. See, that's how I'm into this.
Bjork.
Alternative Bjork. But there's a B in there, isn't it?
It's B-J-O-R-K.
Dress or something.
Bjork.
What is it? Bjork. Yeah. Meets Madonna.
Yeah.
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 90s Madonna.
Yeah. But also, like, taken to some kind of exponent. And, you know, not, you know, beyond squared. We're talking, you know, she's taken those influences and really pushed the limits on some of that stuff. So, but then again, is it that she's really pushing, or is it just we've come so far from, you know, the 80s and 90s? But yeah, I think she's brilliant personally. Not that her music is really my bag, but you know, because I'm not really into the Britney Spears, you know, pop kind of music just in general. That's not my thing. And it's not that, you know, going back to our last episode, it's not snobbery. It's not that, you know, I'm too good to listen to popular music, because as I confessed, Ricky Martin, Milli Vanilli, I mean, you know, so, it's just not my, but actually some of her stuff's kind of catchy. And this new video, Judas, this new song, kind of catchy too, and musically, there's some interesting things that she does with the song, but that's not the angle that I want to talk about it. And the video and the song have elicited some controversy, and without reading the blogs and response to the video, that controversy is probably somewhat predictable.
Yes, I think so. I don't even know why this gets a controversy anymore. There's nothing in that that's any more controversial than Madonna's Like a Prayer video.
Right. Gosh, so, and that is, yeah, that's like, what, 20 years ago? Was that 90s?
Yeah,
was that early 90s?
I don't get why that would be, yeah. You know, in
or
an
Papa
in
Don't
an
Preach.
Age, or Papa Don't Preach, yeah. In an age where it's considered the art to take a crucifix and put it in a bottle of urine and take a picture of it and hang it in a museum, I don't see why that would cause any controversy for her to do it. And I don't see it really so much as, since it is playing with that several layers of meaning there.
Right.
It reminded me a lot of the U2 song about the end of the world. End of the world, the song, the end
right,
of the world.
Right,
that has several layers of meaning of a relationship, but also kind of theological speculation of the fate of Judas and how does that work and things like that. And I think her video and I think the lyrics too resemble that. There's several layers of meaning that are going on there. There's that subconscious kind of why do I do the things that I do, Romans 7 type stuff.
Right.
And then on another level, it's just intentionally biblical to be provocative.
Provocative.
Yeah,
Jinx.
intentionally so. Yeah, provocative. Can I talk here? Can I talk here? So, and then on just another level, I think it's just a love story, right? There's this motorcycle gang, and one of the guys' name's Judas, and she hangs out with the boss all the time. And it kind of it reminded me of the movie The Wild One. All right, I'm letting my hipster root show here. The Wild One. You know, there's a kind of a relationship with the leader of the gang, but you know, there's always an attraction to somebody else in the gang, and that kind of storyline at the same time. I didn't find it offensive. By any means, actually, it was a little corny in some places. I didn't see how the dancing fit in. You have a very, I can't imagine Bono doing that kind of dancing to the end of the world. You know,
Yeah.
like here, wait, in the garden, I was playing the tart. Let me show you what a tart dance is like. We shake like this, and then you know, the Edge puts down his guitar, and they do it together, and so there was, I think there was a cornball cheesiness to it when she added the dancing.
Yeah.
And then I think the stilted Miss Havisham, I'm stuck in a bridal gown, or maybe like a manga version of Miss Havisham stuck in a puppet gown thing. She does that too much. And from what I've seen in the video, she has the same shtick each time, this kind of over-the-top eyeshadow that makes me look stilted. Makes me look like I'm being controlled by something else other than my own body movements and those kind of dance moves, which she may have reached her
She's
peak.
trying to create some kind of visual dissonance
Yeah.
with what she does, the way she dresses and yeah, her makeup and this kind of thing.
Which would be cubist, basically, because she wears her makeup's pointy, the costumes she chooses seem to be pointy. There's lots of angles to them. So there's this cubist motif that I've seen with her, but I'm afraid that she may, just like Facebook in a couple episodes ago, she may have jumped her own shark.
That may be her whole shtick is consistently jumping sharks. She's got lots and lots of sharks.
You know, the
So.
only way that she could jump a shark the other way would be to do like an unplugged, unmake-upped type of deal
Yeah.
where she just sits there with a guitar and
In
sings.
sweats and a t-shirt.
Yeah, well, a V-neck and some tight jeans and a Starbucks and a scarf of some kind.
Well, the thing is what you're actually describing, I find that she is absolutely commercial.
Yeah.
She's created her brand and all of the accessories that go with it. And so for her to go fully hipster or emo or something like that would just be adopting a different brand. And so it would be absolutely no different than what she's doing. It would just be, you know, just a different brand. And so
Yeah.
to go completely brandless, to go, you know, Target, Walmart, you know, in style, that would be the opposite of what she is. You know, just the sweats and the t-shirt. And I mean, she is very high maintenance. I mean, every aspect of what she does, musically and fashion and promotion, all of that is very carefully controlled, scripted, planned out.
And
So.
I wonder, I mean, I think of bands in the past who have reinvented themselves in kind of different ways, but they manage to retain a core identity even when they reinvent themselves. I can't think of an exact I can't think of an exact the best example right now, but you know what I'm talking about. There are artists who kind of like Darius Rucker, right? Hootie and the Blowfish. He went from he's rebranded himself as a country singer, and I think he's done quite well with it. I don't know where Lady Gaga could go. I think she's one of those artists that is she. There's a shelf life to her. The public will either get sick of her or she won't be able to change her shtick that she has
Well,
right now, and
I think her
so.
future's fairly predictable because we have Cher, we have Madonna.
Yeah.
You know, so She's certainly setting herself up for that kind of future.
And taking the long view here, which is why I don't get very riled about stuff in controversy or whatever. She's going to be cycled out of the news for 2 weeks until she comes up with something else. And then in a couple of years, she's going to be a footnote in the music industry as new artists are constantly being manufactured through shows like American Idol and all this stuff, which she's now consulting for or something or performing for. There's that. Why get all in the huff about something that's going to be non-existent in just a few years?
Okay, so let's take that angle though.
Okay
so let's speak to the controversy, because you know, you and I have said, you know, Lady Gaga is what she is. She likes to create controversy. She likes to, whether it's controversy with the music industry, controversy with fashion, or controversy with conservative Christians. And I would say that, like you've said, this song is highly, you know, controversial. I mean, basically, the most controversial thing about the video, to me, just the thing that I found most, distasteful, were the crosses right on the bra. the Jesus Judas imagery, the feet washing, all of that stuff, you know, but that seemed to be kind of provoking to have the crosses right on the nipples. But
didn't even notice it. I guess in a non-religious context, that the cross to me is just a symbol. I mean, it's not even a symbol. It's just a piece of
but it was obviously provoking to, you know, to put it right there on the brassiere thing. But in any case, you know, the song is, you know, yeah, maybe there are some multiple layers of meaning, but the main thread is that, almost going back to your initial statement, she seems to like guys that treat her badly. That's what the song's about. That she still loves this guy who treat her bad.
Yeah, I mean,
Judas is just the name she gives to this guy who treated her bad. It's not that she's in love with the actual biblical Judas figure.
Yeah, exactly. She's using the biblical story as a metaphor for her own take on relationships in her life.
Right. So,
and I think that's how come it would connect with 18 million viewers on the YouTube site.
Well, it's not 18 million viewers. It's 18 million views. And there are some ridiculous people who watched it 4 million times by themselves.
Okay, I may have watched it. By themselves, simultaneously watching Titanic.
So, but anyhow, my question is, why do certain conservative Christians have to get upset about this stuff? Why do they even bother paying attention to this stuff?
I know it's not like, I think there are watchdogs out there that think anytime the Bible is referenced or used or even mentioned somewhere, that they have to make sure they go in there and look at it and make sure it's being done correctly. And then if it's not, to tweet about it and blog about it and talk about it and podcast about it until they feel like they've upheld the veracity of the Bible or whatever. But I would say it's probably the same with anything, with politics. You have politicians that do the same thing when another politician does.
The immediate corollary or some, you know, a similar example to me would be, you know, Muslims who are going to get upset anytime anybody threatens to burn any Quran anywhere in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a dangerous kind of life to have, where you have to get, you know, bloodthirsty, angry anytime anybody in the world, you know, threatens to desecrate any Quran. You know, that's a very dangerous kind of, and I'm not talking about Islam, I'm talking about that particular, you know, implementation or lifestyle. That's crazy. But that's almost exactly the way these Christians are responding too. Anytime anybody does anything remotely blasphemous with regard to God or Jesus, then they get crazy. And that's just not a good way to live. if you're going to get bent out of shape, anybody, you know, when the criteria, when your button is that this easy to push, what kind of way to live is that?
You know, I can just imagine
take
some...
it to a like a Love and Logic kind of you know theme here. It's like, I mean, should it really be that easy for our buttons to be pushed? Do we want to be wearing that big a button where it's that easy to set us off?
I think that you're absolutely right. I think it's crazy. And that you would not just be reactive when something happens, that you would intentionally go out and look for things to react towards.
Why are these people watching Lady Gaga anyhow?
I can't imagine the kind of fundamentalist, like go back to the Islamic example there. Usually this stuff happens in Pakistan for some reason, where the riots happen the most and people end up getting hurt and stuff. Imagine some guy sitting down to dinner with his kids and has Seinfeld on TV. He's laughing it up. He's feeling a pretty good, joyous mood. But then, you know, somebody comes to the door and opens it up and it's like, they did it. They burned it. And then he has to artificially produce lots of anger and then go out and throw rocks at the window or something.
I don't know if it's artificial or not, but it's like, should you really be that easy to set off?
I think there's a communal type of aspect going on as well that pulls it out of people. I don't know. I don't understand it. Maybe because I'm a hipster and...
So last week you were wannabe, but this episode, the conversion, you know, you're moving too fast here, Ben. You gotta have a, you know, some, you have to show some progress. You can't just go from wannabe to full blown one episode to the next.
I also need some snobbery as well. So, I don't care. I don't need,
what about Pabst Blue Ribbon?
Well, I'm not going to start drinking PBR. I'll have to find some new beer equivalent, I guess.
I don't even understand that because beer, it's so easy to be snobbish with beer. And Pabst Blue Ribbon is like the opposite of snobbery.
It's ironically snobberish. Snobbish.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, that's what it is. But anyway, I don't understand, again, shouldn't they on one hand be applauding her for bringing back a biblical allusion to a culture that is supposedly on one hand completely anti-Christian and devoid of all Christian values? Here's a curious paradox here. If our culture is so in need of coming back to faith in God and understanding what the Bible is, why would a popular artist even bother with the allusion of the whole Jesus, Judas, why would they even bother with that if they didn't know that it would make some kind of impact into their audience on a deeper level? It tells me that there's still a consciousness, a religious consciousness in America that she could use an illusion like that and people would do it. I mean, she obviously didn't use like something from the Vedas or the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah.
This supports my earlier premise that she's a genius, that she's pretty smart about what she's doing. And, you know, her music, her image, all of it is very carefully crafted. And so I don't think it's any mistake, you know, that she's chosen some biblical imagery because she's smart enough to understand, kind of like the Bono reference, that, you know, that there is some, you know, this isn't very sophisticated language or very appropriate, but, you know, there's some magical quality to this language. And also I the thing that's also surprising to me is that people want to criticize her. They want to blast her. They want to call this blasphemous and this kind of thing, and not see that, you know, that at some fundamental level, she hasn't distanced herself, kind of as you were saying, distanced herself from whatever Christian heritage upbringing that she has, that there's still some residual faith. She says in this song, you know, Jesus is my virtue, Judas is the demon I cling to. You know, so it's like, it's not like she's trying to distance herself from Jesus or you know, she did not dip the crucifix in the jar of urine here.
No, not at all. But there is the implication earlier in the songs where she says, "I would forgive you three times more." I can't I forget what she said exactly, but
something. Yeah, but again, that's speaking to the relationship reality that she's wrapping in biblical imagery. You know, I'll forgive you, you know, kiss me three times, this kind of thing about the betrayal. And so she's wrapping this love for this guy who treats her bad in some of these biblical, in this biblical imagery. So, yeah, even after three times, yeah, he betrays me, you know, betrays me with a kiss, three kisses, you know, this. Anyhow.
Yeah, I just... It
demonstrates that she has some familiarity with the story.
Yeah, she knows the story. But I also took that to mean, in some sense, it's a question that I think all of us have had, if we're honest about it. Like,
Could Judas be forgiven? Like, yeah, she could forgive Judas, but Jesus couldn't forgive Judas?
Yeah, that kind of implication, or if I can find it in my heart to forgive him, and he treats me like a jerk or whatever, surely Jesus could find it in his heart to forgive, especially if you take the approach that what Judas was doing with Jesus wasn't betraying him in the sense of, I don't like this guy, I'm trying to knock him off, but he was trying to push him, put him in a context, a boiling pot situation where his messiahship would have to come out. And in that sense, Judas, misguided as he was acting as a zealot to make Jesus do what he thought he should be doing. Now, but it wasn't a betrayal, a fundamental betrayal of the friendship. It was a betrayal of and misunderstanding of what Jesus's mission and teaching was. And that's why I think he went and hanged himself. If he didn't like Jesus, if he didn't care for him, then he wouldn't have felt so much remorse that he would have killed himself. So I think there's a lot of validity that hermeneutic there, but I also think that she's pushing that same question. And it goes back to the U2 song as well, where, you know, Judas is in purgatory or hell or whatever at the end of the song. And you have, well, how long are you going to be here until the end of the world? You know, like, there's a sense that there will be a purgation, a purging of his sins somehow, and he'll get another chance, another shot at being judged or something. But I think that also plays into the fundamental theme of, to what degree was he fated to do it? To what degree is Lady Gaga fated to be who she is? Where's the free will involved? Jesus is my virtue, but Judas is the demon that I cling to. How much is the influence? And so I think it's these types of fundamental themes that will make a song like that endure beyond the video. Because, like I said before, the campy dancing, it just doesn't fit with the deeper underlying currents and themes that are in the lyrics themselves and in the musical shifts. Not that I'm an expert in music, but since I'm a hipster now, I can pretend to be.
Well, you should find this music exceptionally distasteful because it's the opposite of indie by every, you know, standard.
You know, I do a lot of running, and when I run, I listen to usually podcasts, but occasionally I'll run and I'll listen to music too. And I have tried really hard to sing and run at the same time before. It is very difficult to do, and I would say I'm in pretty good shape. I mean, I did a half marathon a couple of months ago. I'm going to do a 9-mile race this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
My resting heart rate is, I don't know, 50-something, maybe even lower than that. I feel like I'm in pretty good shape, but there's no way that I could sing and do the dance moves and all the stuff that they're doing.
Right, and that's the way they put on shows. Lady Gaga and Britney Spears and, you know, a lot of these guys. And even, we were talking about the Black Eyed Peas. I think that might have been during pre-production. But the Black Eyed Peas, they do an awful lot of dancing in their concerts, too.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. Maybe there's some kind of way that if they're lip syncing, but they're singing too. And if what they're singing sounds better than what the recorded track has, then it takes over. Or maybe there's some way to measure or gauge that, or a computer program that does that for them. I don't know. Maybe they're just in a lot better shape, but I can't.
I think you probably hit it, is that there's probably a lot of lip syncing going on, and that's why it's so easy for these artists to get caught lip syncing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, singing and dancing at the same time is challenging. And if you're trying to produce, you know, a good quality sound at your concert, which people come to hear, you know, they want the sound to be right.
But that's part of my point too, is that you wouldn't see Brett Denon trying to dance at the same time with his songs.
You'd be surprised at how funky some of his moves were, but it wasn't at all approaching the athleticism you see in these other artists. I was actually surprised that Brett was doing these kind of weird things with his legs.
But he has a guitar, right? I mean,
he had a guitar, so it was mainly with his legs. But every once in a while, he wouldn't be playing, and he'd be doing some weird things with his arms too. And as you know, we had talked about how he'd lost some weight, and as scrawny as he is now, it was kind of weird what he was doing. Kind of like some of the weird things Conan does when he tries to accentuate his lankiness, when he does some weird, you know, full body gesturing stuff. Brett Denon was kind of doing that kind of stuff too, that really kind of accentuated how lanky he was. But no, not anywhere approaching the athleticism that you see in some of these more, you know, pop music shows.
So the video, it's interesting. I guess we'll put a link in the show notes to it.
Certainly.
Yeah. And maybe we'll get lots of hits. And since we've mentioned Hipster in this one too, we can put lots of links to Hipster. But a hipster wouldn't be caught dead.
No, see, that's the thing. It's
listening
like
to our podcast.
You know, we'll have this tagged Lady Gaga and Hipster, and does that cancel itself out in the Google search results? Is the Google algorithm smart enough to recognize that those things don't go together and it just they cancel each other out?
When the Google algorithm can pass the Turing test, then we will know that it can differentiate between Hipster and Lady Gaga.
So, okay, well, we haven't answered much with this particular podcast. So that's pretty much par for us, but there's so much more that could be said. I would say that, you know, it's funny because we don't identify with hardly anything in this particular podcast. Don't identify with Lady Gaga and what she stands for in terms of commercialism and image marketing and this kind of thing. We don't identify with these people who have these massive buttons that are so easy to press.
We do identify with the hipster.
Hipsters, yes.
Yes. If there were a Venn diagram of hipster, I think Kendall those.
Well, that's the thing, you know. If you take these different things that we've talked about here, and there's no intersection. Got Lady Gaga. Your Venn diagram has no overlap. Lady Gaga, conservative Christian wackos, and hipsters.
I think the circle that I could draw that could connect all of those would be
persons of interest, there in the middle.
I'm right in the middle. My liberal arts education has attuned me to find depth of meaning and connection in almost anything. And if it's not there, to make it up.
Yeah. Yes. Which we've done
I think there's a huge connection.
So, and that's going to put a lid on episode 30 of Persons of Interest, as usual. Direct our listeners to the website where they can participate in the dialogue, where they can support the show in a variety of ways, where they can contact us through email or Twitter. And so that's episode 30 of Persons of Interest. I'm Kendall George.
And this has been Craze.